city's department.
And here I'll need my learned friends to help me. I will say, let me put another scenario. The nomination committee nominates 15 people, and you need 9 board members. And then, are you saying as a minister, I'm restricted to considering this 50, and if I identify somebody outside who is more capable, one individual, am I allowed them to bring that name when I consider the appointment process? Or I'm confined to the ones that have been brought by the nomination committee. I can't consider anybody else. I'm bound to consider only those ones.
Thanks, sir. I think my understanding is that you are bound as a minister. You have to select from what you have been given. If you are not happy, you might as well return everything back and then get the committee to bring it.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on.
Okay, we are on number 15 on the A list, which is at 9. I think we dealt with it. So we dealt with it. We're supposed to be close 15 now. Yeah. Plus 15.
Mama, do not get your microphone closer because I couldn't pick you up.
Okay.
I thought you were already in close 15.
Yeah, we are on 15. I think what we inserted there, I've noticed a problem. We didn't insert that on some other section. We just have to check in the court of law. Inserted the law.
Dennis Scott, maybe?
Yeah, no, we that. And then on 17, I just want to try and move a bit faster. On 17, this is an issue about...
On 10. Two comments on 10. On 16. Would it not be fair? I'm the very subject of resignation, removal from office, and vacancies. In others, we indicated that we are referring to the board. Would that not be good if we were to end there that we are referring to the board members? Just to finish off that we know what we're talking about. I also take you, Chair, to line 24 or 23. That's C. No, not C. The line 19. Sorry, line 19. 15.1. A person may not. Did we choose that may deliberately, or shall not, or must not?
Do you want to explain that?
It may not, it shall not. The level Friday says the current approach has made to the
response. Yes, thank you, Chair. Yes, if the current choice of words between may and shall, we go for may in terms of the current drafting standard, because shall was used in all the legislation. So shall is no longer used now, we use the may in drafting. Even when the other when you draft the new law, you use may or must, depending on which empowering for the provision you are drafting.
If that changed mind, is this may means if he could do it if he wants to, why do you use must then? That he has to do it. Or is this optional? It feels like can or not.
And you said that's another dimension then, depending on the policy decisions, and the department will have to assist on that, whether they want to make it compulsory or what. That is no longer a drafting aspect.
Before I forget, Vanana Mema Tibela.
Chairperson, I think I agree with Prof. It should be a must because it talks about members of parliament. Yeah. Yes. If you are a member of parliament. So if we say may, that is not going to do justice to the members.
I'll allow some more debate on this subject for another.
Thank you, Chair. The if one looks from paragraph A to 8, that is from line 20 to 35, has qualifications or disqualifications for members of this board. One get a distinct impression that you're talking here about very serious stuff. The question then is, can you afford to make this optional by using words such as, or discretionary, by using may? I mean, I cannot imagine having an unrehabilitated insolvent with somebody who has proven him or herself incapable of managing his or her finances to be entrusted with an obligation to look after an interest of the nation. We talk here about, convicted criminals. I mean, if you think of opening a slightest opening for such people, you're going to compromise the integrity of this board. Whilst it is a policy decision to decide whether you want to make it discretionary or obligatory, my advice would be obligatory should be a recommended approach. Thank you, sir.
There is an input, Honourable Members. Honourable Blood.
Agreeing, Chairperson. Agreeing with the views of Advocate Bernard.
Okay, we find Honourable Members. We should move from May to March. Thank you. Prof, are you fine now?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. On the 8th is 17, on line number 11, on page 11, line number 33, we are adding the word, which means after the word media, we are inserting and consider application procedures. I think this was an issue about the application received by the minister, that we need to make sure that she consider those applications. It shouldn't be just sufficient on. I think it doesn't change much from the original wording. Then on page 11 again.
Wait a minute. I'm lost.
Now, this cross A needs to be something that can be done. Yeah. Yeah, it was 18. No, because, sorry, Chairperson.
You are saying page 11, 33. Line 33.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
No, I think
it's
a, yeah, I think it's a incorrect reference. I think it's an incorrect reference.
But even in clause 17, very exactly.
Let's have a look at it.
Can we skip it?
Look at it.
Please, relook at that.
Okay. And then on page 11, again, line 45. I think there was an issue about, I haven't forgot the comment that was raised. There was an issue about adding committee, and I think members raised an issue about whether we want to make it flexible because sometimes the audit committee and this committee, they get combined. I think we would look at drafting there and see how we can deal with that aspect.
But as for now, you want to add risk function.
Yes, we are adding the risk function, but we need to make a provision to ensure that the board, it's flexibility from the board to combine some of the committees.
So that they end up having lots of committees.
Yeah.
Just before you go on that, one of the things that we raised on Friday was around line 41. The appointment of the committees with the concurrence of the minister. We did raise that. Did we apply minds on that before we decide on it?
Honorable Sla.
My apologies, sir. Can I take you back a little bit?
Can you finish what I've raised first?
Okay.
We thought about it, Chairperson. I think one of the things that we were sort of worried about is that some of the members that were sort of appointed by the committee might be members that are not within the board. Means the committee might bring in people from outside to participate, or the board may bring in people from outside to participate in these committees. Therefore, we felt probably it's appropriate that the minister is having a sight of those people who will be participating in the board, in the board committees, taking those decisions. Therefore, we didn't change that section, because I think the discussion was that should we allow the committee to set up, should we allow the board, I'm giving a fair committee, should we allow the board to set up committees without the minister concurring to those committees? Then the thing was that if the committees constitute of board members, therefore there is no need for any concurrence by the minister. But once the committees include people from outside, probably you want to have some level of control in terms of, or to some level of oversight in terms of the people who are running these committees or the members in those committees. I think that was the understanding, but I would leave these two members to.
And I'm not.
Yeah, Chairperson, let me start with my understanding of Section 18.1. My understanding is that the board will need the concurrence of the minister in establishing a committee. Now, that is also could be different from the talking about outside people being part of the committee, because my own limited understanding of how boards work, you can't have an outside person sitting on a board. You only have to be board members sitting on the board. And we must draw a distinction of so-called outside and functionaries of ISMA. For instance, on the Human Resource Committee, the person who is heading Human Resource of ISMA will be invited to be part of this subcommittee. These are subcommittees of board. So the person who is heading a Human Resource will take part in the deliberations of the committee, but doesn't have voting powers or whatever. It's just an advisor and support that this person will be giving to the HR committee and clarifying issues that the board members would want to be clarified. The same with the REMCO, Remuneration and Performance Committee. It's board members who will be sitting here, but board members would call the head of HR to assist them, give them information on what they require. So still, the issue of the concurrence of the minister needs to be clarified, because as it were, it's about the establishment of committees, because you can't bring any outsider. An outsider is a consultant who's coming to make a presentation before the board, before the committee of the board, and leaving. Doesn't take part in the discussion except clarifying the input that he or she is making for the duration of that committee meeting. So there is no permanent outsider who can sit on these committees. So I'm saying the issue we still have to talk about, we really need the minister to approve the committee the board establishing its own committee. Obviously, there has to be a reason why you want to do that. If it's for cost reasons, it should be clear that the motivation of retaining it is that we are worried that the board might establish too many committees, which might end up being expensive for the entity, because these people earn board fees by sitting on these committees. So if the motivation has to be clear, what are we trying to achieve? In the legal language of Advocate Barara, they would say decisions of the executive can't be arbitrary. They need to have motivation.
As we move to other members, I would draw your attention to 18.4 as well, which is line 56 and 7. The board may appoint any person with particular knowledge, expertise, or qualification to assist a committee in the performance of its functions. Our members? Or
yes. Then we should maybe then bring in clause 17 the issue of voting rights to determine to be very specific who has got voting rights. Then making reference to only board members. And then my second part is will it be in the regulations, or should we bring it in if we talk about the remuneration of these so-called outside committees or subcommittees? Where will that be in? Because somewhere the beneficiation of that should be also dealt with, or will it be determined by the minister? Or these things leaves a grey area now for me.
I've provoked you, honourable members. I've taken note what honourable Lord has said, but I've said also take on board 18.4.
Yeah.
Yes, honourable Lord, and then honourable Green.
Chairperson, I think there needs to be motivation, clear motivation of why we should retain 18.4, because I assume here you would want. It goes back to my earlier argument. If the board is not clear about anything or need assistance on anything, they are. Enabled to procure the services of a consultant to assist them for just the duration of the problem that they are facing or the matter that they are trying to address. I think that's normal standing that parties they can do that. But to then start to say you want the board to appoint people to be permanent members of committees, that's problematic. But the board is entitled to get experts to say we are dealing with this situation. We want CEO, can you then, through your own supply chain arrangement here, go and secure the services of an advisor to come and assist the board on this matter? Then the advisor is there, comes to make a contribution before a board committee or even before the full board. And then the board takes the decision and that person is dismissed. That person was just there for the duration of that task. So I would still say then, my understanding would be, okay, if the department would want to have a board appointing external people to be permanent, then the section 18.1 should still apply. I'm not sure, Chairperson, whether my point is clear. If we are retaining 4, then 18.1 would apply. Because even if I was the minister, I'd be interested in who are these people bringing to be permanent committee members.
Yes, I'm allowing a lot of debate so that we agree, because You see, Honourable Senator, another thing here, if you look at 18.4 is more generic. It's a little bit of a, it's indicative of an indefinite activity. Not a, what, I hope I'm right. But let's go back to what you are saying, which is more of a focused issue. An example is that they are handling an issue around, new issues emerge around dispatching. They then want to bring an expert for that specific issue on a specific meeting or a couple of meetings focused on dispatching. Yeah. Then it, when it's done, yeah, then they can part ways. Whereas, in my understanding, 84 is actually saying that these persons may be there to assist a specific community in the performance of its functions. No, I'm just saying the two contrasting, functions. I'm saying it deliberately for when the department responds, we should have that in mind, that this is what you have provoked. And before the department responds, I can see their hands coming up, Honorable Slough, Honorable Lord, and then Advocate.
I agree with Honorable Molotov. The clause is not specific. I think when the department responds, they should really write the clause is not specific. In that it is neither saying permanently, yeah, nor temporary.
Yes.
It's just quite on how long. Whether it's going to assist in the performance of its functions for the rest of his existence, or his term of office, or for a particular period until a particular matter is dealt with. It's not very clear.
Chairperson,
yes.
I would have loved to speak out to Advocate Vanara and just benefit from the legal interpretation of Section 18.4, I agree with Honorable Slough. He doesn't say whether this is permanent or temporary. In actual fact, to me, if I had to read it again, it goes back to the consulting appointment of a consulting story. That the board is entitled to appoint the consultant to help them perform a certain function. It doesn't say that they must be committee members. For me, it's an assumption. The question is, I don't see why we need, if we want to create clarity, then we might as well remove four, because the assumption is that the board naturally empowered to then secure the services of any person to come and make a presentation before them, help them develop a certain strategy. That's a given. So if it's a given and then we have got this confusion that's arising about the concurrence of the minister with the committee, so I'm saying we need to remove four and then leave with the issue of, do we really need the minister's approval for the establishment of the subcommittees? And what's the motivation? Because the assumption always is that the board is entitled to reorganize its own business and establish committees that will help it fulfill its mandate. The issue is maybe, I'm just assuming here, that maybe you are doing it for the reasons of cost, not of outsiders, because outsiders can never see be permanent members of any committee. So you are doing for the reasons of saying we need to contain costs. You guys can't go and establish 10 committees because you want to earn more board fees.
Chair, I think part of the problem that I have with the wording in 4 is the board may appoint, because appoint is quite a strong term. It gives an indication that somebody's actually been appointed onto a committee. Perhaps what we should be talking about is rather call upon the services of any person or with particular knowledge. Because appointed seems to have a kind of ring of permanence to it and a sense that you're a fully fledged member. If we're talking here about consultants, then calling upon the services is, I think, a better terminology than to say appoint somebody onto that particular committee.
Vanara, I wanted you to have the benefit of various inputs before you give advice.
Not that I want to claim to have all the answers on these complex matters. But one, I think one would acknowledge that there is a bit of uncertainty that this provision creates. Firstly, one needs to understand that we are creating a company, a state-owned company. And therefore, your corporate governance principles should come to the fore. I have not done some research around how in the Companies Act these issues are attended to. However, I would like to share some few experiences on this provision, on this clause, clause 18. Once the board has been appointed, of course, it does, I think that one of the provision, clause 17, one, gives the board the competency to determine its, or it only says it procedures at meetings. My understanding is that boards will have a lot of leeway in determining its own internal arrangements. So that if the board thinks that it should have different committees, subcommittees, to deal with specific subject matters, it should be able to do that, and to do so independently. However, there are those areas that require of the board to source specialized services. For instance, if the board requires a legal opinion, the board should be able to source that legal opinion. But we're now not talking about somebody that has been employed or appointed permanently in the board, but we talk of a specialized service that the board requires at a particular time. However, there are committees, like one would say, there are standing committees. For instance, your audit committee. I see there's a confusion here, because the board can't be an audit committee. It can't establish within itself an audit committee. An audit committee is an advisory committee to both the board and the administration around the issues of risk, around audit matters. Now that board clearly, under that committee, will have to be appointed to give assurances and advice on the risk to both the board and the administration. Now while all this can happen, it is not clear what is envisaged, where and how this is to be done. I think that is where that confusion comes into play. And perhaps then, with the benefit of a response from the department, try and understand their reasoning. For instance, I see there's a Remuneration Performance Committee, Human Resource Committee, and Audit Committee. Now, as Honorable Mloto indicated, these A and B committees, 18-1 A and B committees, I mean, these, from where I sit, could be committees established within the board. But surely you can't have an audit committee. I mean, audit, board members that are now audit committee members. Those are, I think, a type of issue that needs to be clarified, Chair.
From Lotto, still want to have a vote before we allow the department.
Chairperson, I'm trying to download my circus interpretation of which is law and system. On issues of corporate governance scheme 3. The issue that I have, and this is where my Ireland and friends must have, the Companies Act is explicit that a company must establish the audit committee. It's in the Companies Act that an audit committee must be established by a company. And I think we have to go and refer back on the Companies Act and King 3. In terms of a normal company, the shareholders approve the appointment of the audit committee. Because the audit committee owes fiduciary responsibility to the company. But, Chairperson, without prolonging and complicating the issue, I still feel Section 4 18.4 is not relevant, because if you look at section 9 of the bill, which is chapter 3, it says the board is responsible for the managing the business and affairs of ISMA. So I would say in that statement, you get elements of four. In that statement, you get elements of four. By through, if it's empowered to manage the affairs of ISMO, then the board will be empowered to go and appoint service providers. Therefore, to avoid confusion, you have to take out this section four, but still remain with the issue where we want to have the motivation from the department, why they want to appoint, they want the board to appoint committees in concurrence with the minister, because our understanding is that no outsider will sit on this committee, will be a member of these committees.
Arvus now, and then Prof. will be the last.
Section 4 be built in section 1. Be built in there. And then we don't have the section 4. In other words, the section 1 extends, it means the minister's concurrence only in the appointment of those three committees. And then thereafter the board marks the rest of the business of the board shall be done by the board itself. And then section 4 seems to contradict that concurrence. Maybe it should then be built into that, so that it becomes part of this issue that must have the concurrence. I hope the department can be able to understand that area. The issue related to audit committees, I suggest we qualify the type of an audit committee. Because we have got external audit and internal audit. And I'm sure this one refers to the internal audit committee. Maybe we should just qualify it so that it does not create an impression that the board wants to appoint people that must audit it. Therefore, it's going to have influence where the audit reports should have been negative towards the activities. So we must, and the purpose of an internal audit committee is really to alert you on a day-to-day as your business goes around, whether you are going astray or you are in charge. If things are going haywire, before it goes to external audit, they must be able to warn you and must correct that behavior. That is the idea of an internal audit committee. Thanks.
My understanding, Chair, Honorable Slaw, is that internal versus external audit doesn't need committees. But it's a passing, you appoint internal auditors, but you have an external auditor. But when it comes to an audit committee, in the general practice, even King III, in fact, I've just been drawn to my attention that even King II indicates that an audit and remuneration committee at least must be established. But I've said that, just check King III as well and see. But there's still suspense of that, but it's most probably is. Yeah, just on that. Prof.
Chair, in my past life as a university council member, I was a member of the audit committee. My understanding is these board committees are chaired by a board member. So the external auditors and internal auditors report to the audit committee, which is chaired by board members. So from that understanding, I don't see any conflict with an audit committee being a board committee, part of the board committees. So I'm proposing that these committees that we have here, to me, I'm HIBISA, the remuneration, human resource, and audit, and the important thing about all of those, they are going to be chaired by board members, because all these board members, especially when you talk about the non-executive, are outsiders looking in so that the day-to-day operations of the field workers officers are reported to them.
Honorable Lord, and then Honorable Smiley.
I think the real debate is the issue of concurrence on the establishment of committees.
Yeah.
There is no debate about audit committee. An audit committee is not an internal audit committee. The two are different. The internal audit committee is something else. It's an audit committee of the board. The board sitting there, but and the reason why some of these things are there is because of the financial scandals that have happened before. To say you want the audit committee there to be independent, you know, in their thinking, and that they should be able to alert certain things to shareholders, and why you want it at every annual general meeting. That if there's an appointment process, the shareholders must approve the audit committee. And secondly, the shareholders want to, the issue why you talk about issue of remuneration, the shareholders must approve remuneration, approve the audit committees, and sometimes even appointment of external auditors, the issues of board fees. But that's not the debate. The debate is the issue of the concurrence, whether you want the minister, and what the motivation of wanting the minister to agree to the board before the board sees and say we want to have this committee. The board, the chairman of the board now must send a letter to the minister and wait for the minister's approval. Say, minister, I agree with you, can establish the committee and continue. So that's the motivation we want to understand, Chairperson.
Honorable
Smiley.
Chairperson,
I
have there's different views on how we've got to deal with clause 18.1 and with 18.4. And my suggestion is that one somehow red flag this specific clause for the committee for us to make that decision or to come up with something. And then at some point we come back to the specific clauses. So where we have got issues certainly with certain clauses, we red flag those one or two or three clauses in this bill, so that we specifically just come back later at a later stage just to deal with that.
Point taken, but even there, I saw the advisor wanted to make an input before the department.
Thank you, Chair. While the committee is making a decision, I would like to consider Honorable Slau's proposal that we take out the concurrence when it comes to 18.1 and 2 and 3, and then we take it down only to apply to sub 4, in order to say the board may, with concurrence of the minister, and then also deal with that point as suggested by Honorable Kaling, and then we say may designate any person, and then it continues. So that we limit the concurrence only to sub 4, if we're retaining the 4. And no concurrence issues must be applicable to other committees.
Okay. I think that doesn't provide a solution if it limits sub, unless I didn't hear that properly. That you're saying we should then, the concurrence should only be limited to 18.4. That will provide serious problems. It means the board, every time they want to appoint the consultant, they need to go and get the concurrence of the minister.
Okay.
That would be problematic.
Why don't you hear from the department as why they wanted to start such a way? Prof, you still want to go?
Yes, sir. We have
agreed
that the chairman that it comes to them, it is not a problem to come with a left change. And the only person sitting on board is somebody who is going to come on a temporary basis to assist here and there. Once we take that into consideration, we don't need that section 4.
Nazo, from Gobert, I think we've thrown enough on it, please.
Thanks, Chair. I think the understanding, Chair, was that if we were to introduce a person from outside into the board with their particular expertise and qualification to assist on a particular matter, then you need the concurrence. But if we go with a view that says we don't need anyone from outside to participate in these committees, we can take out 4 and then remove the concurrence there. And then we just say these are internal committees that are established by the board. Rather, the board could use some of the internal staff to assist in making those decisions. But that does not preclude the board appointing consultants to do other work or even advise, because in any event, consultants will be appointed by the, the board to do a whole lot of work, you know, in the company. The fact that we are saying the board, it doesn't necessarily mean the appointment consultant or expertise on a temporary basis at a lower level doesn't necessarily have to be approved. It depending on the figures, it's a pyramid that guides it and how you separate the appointment of consultant depending on how much the project costs. I would suggest that probably let's take out four and then take out the concurrence, and then we sort of leave those functions to be internal functions.
Honorable Smale, do you still stand on your proposal for red flagging if this is the response? Because it's moving closer to what the general trend was coming from the committee. That remove both concurrent and 8 and 4. Fine. So I would find, honourable members, to remove concurrence of the minister and allow the board to do the appointments, and also remove 18-4. Okay.
Then we go back to, I think we were in 21, close 21. I think the one that we omitted.
Yes. I think there was an issue that we raised even on Friday, and they said they would look at it. Is the issue of the percentages of for the court? Remember at one stage there were 70 and 75. I'm not sure whether they looked into it.
Yes, sir.
No, sir, Chair, so my colleague is looking at me. I was in favor of the 70% chair, so the department from the police was going to go back and look at it. Because I gave the motion that we got the 70% from the from Parliament. So that is where the motivation was from. So I would be guided by the police of the department.
Have you applied your minds?
Oh,
it didn't have the benefit of the explanation. But I mean, I think you need to go a little bit more elaborate in explaining.
Thank you, sir. What I explained on Friday, my reply is that the trend in Parliament, most of the SOEs that were established in the committees, Parliament insisted on making the percentage to be a bit higher so that the decision-making on serious issues is not easy in board members, and it was because of the frustration with the previous SOEs like SAPC and the post office and others. So this bill was drafted after we went through that process. So it's used as a basis what was requested of us by Parliament in most of the other relevant legislation dealing with similar issues. But when I explained, I said we are not limited to that because we must look at the circumstances of ISMO. But that is the motivation behind the 70% that Parliament felt there's a need to be stricter with the SOEs, the boards, and all the structures around them.
Okay. Since everyone is quiet.
No, that is on my side, I was wondering, because if you start over, I think, of 9 board members, and say the quorum is 70%, because means if you are less than 6, like Michael, you know, says you are 70%, 6.3%, you can round it downward or upward. I was saying, if that is the case, you need no less than 6 for the board to sit, because all the cities in Australia were killing that board. It's worse if you go to the next page, where they are doing about 25%.
if that is a trend, if you go to the next page, where were we? If you go to page 12, the line is 5. The board may, by resolution, pass by 75% of its members to AEDC. I'm saying, even in Parliament, our decisions are not based on 7%, even Parliament itself. And we're imposing this to government structures, in the process killing them, because they'll never meet, and therefore, but if that is a personal say what I'm saying, I'm very comfortable, uncomfortable with that route.
Prof, this is the point that we raised on Friday, to say, and the reason what was advanced was that in I don't know, other meetings of parliament, committees were feeling strong that they want to have 70% and 75%. And our problem was that these committees must struggle to meet because of that high threshold for the quorum. And for me, I personally, I still believe you need a simple majority for the committee to proceed with its own normal meetings. Because, the issue is, I don't want to prolong the delay, but if what is applicable in the private sector is the practice of 50% plus, why do you want to vary it when it comes to public entities? Maybe people saying, then they must even give more serious attention to the issues of public entities. I don't know, but the challenge is that if you have 10 members sitting on your board, the quorum is 7. If you have 6 for that day, you disperse and go home and must reconvene again and try again. That's the biggest challenge that you're facing.
Honorable Slough first.
Chairperson, I would go along with the 50+1%, but that 50+1% cannot be used in major decisions, such as adoption of the constitution and so on. There are major decisions where you need a two-thirds. That is what the normal practice is in many formations and organizations. For an ordinary meeting to quote correct, it's 50+1. But for a major decision to be taken, and maybe what decisions are referred to as major may be described somewhere. But those major decisions must be taken by 66.6%, which is two-thirds majority.
Thank you, Chair. I was just going to emphasize that as much as this is a good thing to keep at the back of your mind, what is the trend in Parliament is, I want to remind you that this is your bill, so you must pass what is you're going to be comfortable with, because you're not bound by that trend or that threshold. So members must be at ease to give us a policy decision on what is needed in terms of ISMO.
Just to emphasize on that, as the department, we are basically informed by the state or advisations of the trend. So in that regard, that's why we did support 75%. But to a certain extent, it's more policy decision that to a certain extent, the committee can advise us on that, which then the department will.
Can I
explain
19.1A? It's a little bit lengthy. The rationale between 19.1A.
As we move towards...
Chair, if I may spend it in the works, the composition of the board is 7 non-executive members plus the 2 fully fledged members. Now, if a quorum must be formed and a decision must be taken, and your 2 fully fledged members is not present, what then? What I'm asking is, because could you hamper the organization if one of those dimensions is not there? And that comes to where Honorable Salah says, is certain decisions that must be taken by the board, where the fully fledged board members should be, or partly should be there present. Because you don't want to create a situation where
where a impact of the organization that one or two of those members should have had maybe the opportunity or must be there present in order to state the case or to have that effect. And it comes back to what Honorable Salah says, is that we then have got to formulate, or the regulations must then provide to say what for certain decisions X, Y, Z must take place, and then the minister must be tasked in order to set that aside. I'm happy with as it states, but then you've got to say to the minister, you've got to set aside in your documentation what are the decisions that the board can take on a certain thing, and what needs more a bigger board, or making sure that those fully fledged members are present at that time, or even a minister, or whatever the case is. But I think it should go into further detail at some point.
Can, before I take hands, can the department just explain the 19.1A to that part?
Thank you, Chair. I think 19.1A, Chair, what it says is that the board can delegate certain functions, it can delegate certain functions to the committees. However, that delegation must be passed by 75% majority. And then, but then if you read further up to section 4, then it sort of then spells out some of the things that as board you will not be in a position to delegate. With one of them, like for instance, the appointment of the chief executive officer and the chief financial officer. That's what that section tries to cover.
In other words, 19.1 is not for every decision that's made by the board. But it's not for every resolution that's made by the board. It's for specific resolutions, as articulated in 19.1A and 19.1B. Okay. Now that's just what I wanted to understand. Then I can go back to where they were hands. It could take into account what Honorable Slawa and Honorable Smalley have said. Honorable Lord, followed by Prof.
I would advise that maybe we should park it a bit and ask the department to look at it, and also try to consult with the National Treasury. Because I know for a fact that there are certain decisions of state-owned enterprise that they can't take without the department, the relevant department, having had a discussion with the National Treasury and agreed to. I'm trying to look for that specific provision in the PFMA, but I can't recall. For instance, even with the SAA and all those entities, there are certain decisions, major decisions, I can't recall in what respect that they would have to, I'm not sure it's 54 or what. Yeah, if we could maybe we could just clarify that and then we park it and deal with it at a later stage.
Okay, that's it. Thank you. You can proceed.
Thanks, Chair. I think there are certain decisions that are sort of guided by the Public Finance Management Act. I think the member is right, Lord is right. And the PFMA is clear in terms of what is it that a public entity can do and what is it that they cannot do. And it also categorizes the entities in terms of listing, whether it's listed under Schedule A or Schedule B and other way. And then those entities, the listing of those entities, it got a particular meaning under the PFMA. One of which is the borrowing powers, for instance. There are certain entities that cannot borrow money. And there are certain entities that can borrow money, but with the approval of National Treasury. There are certain entities that cannot enter into long-term agreements, for instance, without having National Treasury to approve those agreements. So there are a number of things that are sort of get categorized in terms of what these state-owned entities can do and what these state entities cannot do. And I think that is sort of listed in the PFMA. But what this bill tries to do, it doesn't necessarily address those things. We sort of leave for the PFMA to deal with that part of regulation in terms of what these entities should do from a financial perspective. I thought we just say that.
Let me read you this relevant section. Maybe it will help us in future when we process that aspect of around the issue of the quorum. It says, Section 54 says, the accounting, okay, let me start it where it might be shorter. It says, before a public entity concludes any of the following transactions, the accounting authority for the public entity must promptly and in writing inform the relevant treasurer of the transaction and submit relevant particulars of the transaction to its executive authority, to DOE in this instance, for approval of the transaction. A, establishment of participation in the establishment of a company. They can't do that without approval of DOE. Participation in a significant partnership, trust, unincorporated joint venture, similar arrangement. They can't do that. Acquisition or disposal of a significant shareholding in a company, acquisition or disposal of a significant asset. So SAA can't just go and buy 50 Airbuses without the approval of DPE. I'm just giving the time to put some practical examples into this. Commence or cannot, on the issue of commencement or cessation of a significant business activity. They can't just stop a business activity. A significant change in the nature of or extent of its interest in a significant partnership, incorporated joint venture, or similar arrangement. Therefore, Chairperson, it goes back to my issue without following the discussion. You need a simple majority. This guy can't do anything that's significant when you even require the 75% if you want to amend the constitution of the country. So you can simply conduct their own business 50%, but these are the conditions. They can't go and make a major acquisition without the approval of the executive authority. They can't dispose of the assets of the company. People are worried that a small number of people can meet and say we are selling these assets of East, but they can't, or we're going to buy a major thing without the approval of the executive authority. So even going to an adventure with another entity, they will still need the approval of the authorities, of the executive authority in this instance. That will be the Minister of Energy. So that's why I'm saying, Chairperson, even if we pack it, let's be mindful of the fact that there are certain limitations that are put on the boards of the public entities. So we shouldn't pull heads about the 75% thing, you know. Simple majority, 50%, but let's pack it for another day, Chairperson.
Okay, let's start it and then move.
Chairperson, thank you. I was going to say we need also to look at 19 as we change the majority, the 51% majority by the board, on whether 19 is still relevant, the one that relates to delegation, that when you delegate, you know, what's the...
Okay, we look at the comeback with a refinement or a dwell on that.
Chair, I'm proposing that we should try and reduce it. Because I think it says 75%. And we have proposed that probably we need to consider reducing, you know, the current 70% majority as it stands, to 51 bars. What I was raising is that, 50 plus one as a forum. What I was raising is that in 19, we talk about now delegation of certain board function, whether that's still acceptable or we want to make the 50 plus one also applicable in that particular section. That's what I was sort of just testing whether.
I assume I'm admitting this to you. I think
the issue of the percentage are problematic, but it's up to the board to the DOE must guide us here. Because what you normally delegate to the CEO, for instance, you want to say the CEO, you can spend for a maximum of 10 million without that issue coming before the board. You are putting expenditure limits. For capital expenditure, CEO, for an amount of 20 million that you can spend without coming to the board. But anything above 20 million that you want it to come to the board. So I think those are what those delegations mainly would refer to. For instance, you want to go to a committee and say, this committee, we are giving this committee the powers to approve anything that's below 10 million. But for any matter that's above 10 million, then you'd want it to be approved by the board. So I think we need to figure our head there. The issues of the percentages, I don't know. But I think maybe on this resolution of delegations, maybe there are something quite serious. You would want board members to seriously consider whether they want to give the CEO the powers to spend capital expenditure of worth 20 million rand without the approval of the board. Maybe the 20% might still spend, but I don't know, Jefferson. But on the quorum of the board, normal quorum of the board, I still insist for 50% plus one. But on this one of delegations, because it's something that's more serious to the board, because they are giving their powers away in a way to say, you can go and spend. So those have to be held liable for having delegated those responsibilities to the CEO or any board committee. But I think maybe it's serious, we could leave it at 75, I don't know. Because it's a once-off thing, almost, for the life of a board. Say, CEO, as long as you're the CEO of this board, from now on, 20 million rand you'll spend. So board members, all of them might maybe want to take that conscious decision. It's not something that you want to vary every 6 months. It's something that you take once for the life of that board.
I see. Nobody is deferring. It's Honorable Lot. Honorable Slough.
My only problem, sir, because I want to differ with it from the angle of maximizing participation in an issue of major importance. But my only worry here is that you are talking about a board which is about 80% non-executive. It's people working elsewhere. Who come to those meetings as and when called. Some of them, the meetings are clashing with other meetings and they would apologize. Is 75% not really for making it too difficult for them to meet, to make a decision? Because I was proposing earlier that we look at the normal two-thirds majority general rule. It's a general rule that we use everywhere. I think this committee uses two-thirds also to make bigger decisions.
Yeah,
66.6%. Yes. And then Comrade Monoto agrees with me, Honorable Chairperson.
I just like the word two-thirds.
Well, if other members concur, then we're fine. Okay, I take it to concur. Yes?
It's what you're familiar with this country.
Okay, we change the other one to 50 plus 1, and then the other one delegation to the expert. Okay. You want to say something?
Yes. I hear the proposal that is coming from the committee. Obviously, the committee is giving guidance, you know, in some aspects, but I'm a little worried with some of the aspects, given that ISMO in the country is unprecedented, and obviously to allude or to sort of say let's go with a 50 plus 1 for major decisions, I think basically is going to put a strain on the department, you know, in terms of now basically second guessing most of the decisions that will be coming from the entity. Perhaps we can move towards that ratio, you know, probably after ISMO has been fully operational, ISMO has established a track record, you know, in certain aspects, then probably we can relax those percentages to be aligned with the norm. But on a new entity that we are establishing, you know, also, you know, charting a new course of business. So I think I'm a little bit worried, you know, about just basically lowering the quorum to as low as 50 plus 1. Basically, that would mean now each time a decision comes to the department, this kind of means the department must do its own due diligence to basically be sure that whatever has been decided is okay. Given the fact that what we have been explaining here is that if ISMO is going to do what we have presented to the House, we are talking by and large 20-year long-term contract, which is quite a significant in terms of finance. Obviously, there is a fact of PFMA, which ISMO cannot do X, Y, Z, you know, subject to PFMA, etc., etc. But I would like us to reconsider those ratios. We can go to those ratios over time, but probably during the establishment, let's sort of be a little bit tight. But obviously, that's a view. Obviously, this is the committee's bill now. The committee can basically give us money orders, but I would like the committee to just consider, be more considerate in that aspect.
Oh.
Okay, let's start this side and go down.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think the delegation of power is something that I do agree that we should achieve that. But it's very important that we've got to make sure that the minister gives guidance through regulations to take into consideration what is standing in the PFMA and what is a two-thirds majority, what is a two-thirds majority vote that is needed for certain decisions making to take place. Once that is in place, I do not think that the department should be worried about if it's contracts that are that you are referring to, then those things should be taken into account. If it holds certain, if measures certain financial fiscus decisions that need to be taken or that resolves around major capital and expenditure, these are the things that must be taken up into the regulation. For a normal day-to-day running of a board or certain audit committee that sits and take revisions or certain things, then a 50 plus 1 takes into account. It depends what are the powers that you give to certain decisions making. And this must be clear in the regulations, which should take effect. If you're not going to bring out regulations that is going to give guidance to that, then I say, yes, any decision can bring problematic areas. So if we're staying with the one, the other has got to hold water. But if
that's my thing, and I really hope that the minister will give some sort of regulations to in giving guidance to where these decisions will take place.
If we craft the legislation in that manner, honourable man. Honourable
Lord. Yeah, I think just to reassure our colleagues from the department, if I were to be honest with you, if I were to be a board member of ISRO, there are no major decisions that I can't take. A checks and balancing system. One, the section 54 that we just read, that you can't do major acquisitions, disposal, joint ventures, whatever, is restricted by section 54. Ordinary meetings of 50% plus one, the decision to appoint the CEO is done in concurrence with the minister. So there are checks and balances within the system. So for ordinary meetings, we want to appoint the CEO, that will be done in consultation with the minister. On the issue of delegations around issues of capital expenditure and related matters, the two-thirds will still apply. So they can't take a major decision delegating capital expenditure without the required, the way I'm looking at it, unless, and the department also should look through the bill and see whether we have given the minister power enough to recall a member who's not attending meetings. So I think that's another stick of ensuring that people attend. Because if you are a member of a board, you don't want it to be known that you are called for non-attendance of board meetings, because it affects your standing within the business community.
Honourable staff, followed by Prof.
Yes, we agree with Honourable Moloto, Chairman. I think clause 14 of the bill must include the issue of non-attendance. But I want the department to understand that we are not coming from the issues we have been talking about, the percentages. We are talking percentages of minimum attendance. What we actually want is 100% attendance in every meeting. We are not going to sit here with an understanding that as long as you have 50 plus 1%, other people can become board members by name. They should also be either in the constitution or in regulations, where it is outlined how many times of absence without failure is equivalent to desertion, and therefore such a member is fired himself or herself from the board. Those kinds of strict elements of discipline needs to be adhered to in separate documents and to be put in here. I think the board will have a constitution of some kind that will guide, which must include those kinds of things and then linked to what the constitution says. Maybe code of practice and code of conduct, as well as disciplinary code, must be put there and procedures. So that if a member, I think what it says here, the act says here that the minister may terminate a member of the board and on account of particular areas. But there isn't a clear mention of areas of misconduct and discipline, you know, such as non-attendance, and so on and so forth. Those can be put there just to make sure that board members must not take it for granted that as long as I'm appointed, I'll go there as and when I like. There must be certain particular disciplinary disciplined conduct that the member should understand is all due. Because here you're talking about electricity to the nation. A huge responsibility.
Thank you, sir. I think if we translate this into literal numbers, 50 plus 1 is 5 out of 9. Yes. And I don't think that is fair. And 2/3 is 6 out of 9. When we have to get to that end, surely I don't think we're leaving anything out in the earth. We're not making this easier than we're supposed to. But as I said, the main concern is once you push it such a way that the board never meets, we are not going to get our own goals as well. Thank you.
topic to one another.
The checks and balances are there in the system, and if this thing is not functioning, you know, one thing I like about even state-owned entities more than private sector companies is that you, with state-owned entities, to come here to Parliament and accounts, not a nice thing, because the ISMO, the board of ISMO, will be called to Parliament to come and account, and the cause of their attendance is there. In terms of writing an annual report, you are required to disclose all those facts. But what fee that you have earned, the attendance, whether it's of trainings or normal board meetings, is there. So it's public knowledge. And then they appear before Parliament, they appear before this committee, in actual fact, for this committee to assess whether people are doing their job or not. I mean if it's clear for 3 meetings, 4 meetings of the year, you see that type of attendance where it's 50% plus one, you'd have to ask who are the regular attendees and encourage the minister to deal with the matter. And you don't want to be explaining yourself to a parliamentary committee like the SABC. It's not like it.
Okay. So, number four, just trying his last shot, of course, out of experience and making projections. But at this stage in time, one of the members was saying then it's 50% plus one for a quorum and 2/3 insofar as clause 19 one is concerned. Thank you. Let's then proceed.
Thanks, sir. I think the next issue is on clause 21. I wanted to skip the 20, but I think the 20 was the... Yeah, the one that we didn't...
You're moving a bit fast. Can you get the microphone closer to you?
Okay, on page 2, that error we had on point 17. The correction is on page 12, which goes to clause 20, line 33, after the word meter, insert and consider application shift. Okay.
I think they were starting to find a relevant provision where they say all applications that have been submitted to through the media must be considered. They were looking for that, and they found it in section 3.
In other words, in the A list at the bottom, instead of saying clause 18, you should have read clause 20. And this is just saying on page 11, you should have said on page 12. Okay.
Okay, thanks, sir. The next one is 21. I think last week we discussed the issue around the appointment of the chief executive officer. And
sir, can I take you to page 13 before we cross over to that page?
Okay, proceed to Amongo.
Okay, page 12. There was an issue, I think it's actually said clause 21. There was an issue about the appointment of the chief executive officer and the chief financial officer on whether do we need to have a concurrent by the minister. And then secondly, there was also an issue about the term. There was an understanding that probably the term, the 8 years might be okay for the chief executive officer, but whether it's fair to the chief financial officer to say it must be also be subjected to the same conditions. We were given a task to go and have a look and do whether we can do a scan and see how other legislation are drafted in terms of that. We had a look at, we looked at the ESCOM Convention Act. It doesn't say anything. It's quiet on it. It doesn't even say anything about the chief executive officer either. It's related to the appointment of those people. And we're not sure whether that's the right thing to do. If you are quiet about it's actually short, I think it's about 2 pages or something like that. So then we got to a conclusion that probably what we should do, we should remove the chief financial officer, but keep the chief executive officer in terms of the 8 years period. We sort of made an amendment there, but I think to do justice, we need to look at the provision carefully and clean up the bill, because that way it doesn't appear there only, it appears on other sections as well, if the committee agrees with that proposal.
I'll definitely support that arrangement of removing the CFO because you want the CFO of the organization to remain in the organization for a longer period if they so wish. But the CEO, you could tie it up to a board to a certain extent, because this person who must really drive the implementation of the board strategy. And if the CEO and the board are not agreeing, you know, don't want to keep that CEO forever in that position.
Thank you. There was also an issue about the remuneration packages, which are determined in concurrence with the Minister of Energy and the Minister of Finance, and also were required to sort of have a look at that based on the ESCOM Act, because that's what a sort of ESCOM Convention Act, that's what I sort of benchmarked with. It's not mentioned. I think it's quiet when it comes to that. I think we, as a department, we are not necessarily married to this provision. If the suggestion that we should, we might as well check out the whole clause. If we believe through the committees that we mentioned earlier on, the remuneration committee, they would address that issue. I don't know. I would leave it to members. If there is no need for concurrence, we can remove the concurrence, or we can remove that clause completely and leave the board and through the committees that we sort of mentioned in clause 18 to deal with those matters.
Yes, Honourable Slough, Honourable Lord.
So I want to go back a little bit in the same clause. I see the word risk committee here, but I haven't heard the department speaking to this risk committee.
Honourable Slough, we are focusing on clause 21 for now. Can you finish with and dispense with it?
Clause what?
21. Well, in 21 and line 12, line 52 and page 12.
Yeah, line 52 means that we have passed line 45. And the risk of which I'm referring to, yeah, is on line 45.
Okay, can you elaborate?
It's not spoken. He has not said anything about it. It's written in 25, but he has not said anything about it.
Okay.
Whether it still exists or is out of order, I don't know.
Okay. Thanks. I think what we're proposing is that we want to include the risk committee into the list. I think that's the amendment that we're proposing. Actually, we're also saying we think we need to provide some flexibility in terms of the committees. so that the board should be in a position to package these committees.
I'm lost now. I don't know what to say.
I really do not know what to say. Where are we? You've been beside me.
Sorry, Chair, for that. We are still in 21.6. I was sort of explaining the risk committee that Tesla asked. To say the risk committee, you will find it, I think it's in 18.
It goes back.
And we did address the risk committee.
Yes, yes, we did talk about it.
There's no convention of people consulting the Minister of Finance on the relation packages of their CEO, then I don't see any point in bringing it here. For other reasons that I'm not aware of, because even I would rather have a situation where we end with the Minister of Energy. If we want to talk about approval of remuneration of a CEO, I'd rather go to the extent of the Minister of Energy, but not extend it to the Minister of Finance. I think that's just too much. Or do away with the whole section together. Either retain the Minister of Energy only, or do away with the whole section. But to include the Minister of Finance here, it's just a lengthy process. And if there's no common practice of entities that are reporting to energy, for instance, PetroSA, if you are not determining the remuneration of the CEO of PetroSA, why do you want to determine the remuneration of ISO or CEF and all those entities? If you are not determining it, the minister is not involved in the determination, then it might as well fall off the same section.
Any input from the committee on the fund?
I propose it falls off.
It falls off, honorable members?
Yeah.
Okay, it falls off. 21.6 falls off. Thank you. You may proceed.
The problem is that the process got different stages, which is problematic. There's an approval determined by the board, but there's an aspect of the Minister of Energy, the Minister of Finance. If you want, you can remove, if you don't want to remove the whole section and taking out the Minister of Energy and Finance, then you can say it's determined by the board, leave it there. And then that's still the board's responsibility. And of course, that's a normal practice. The board must go and do a scoping, whatever, engage with service providers who can go and study the thing. It's a more final. That must approve the remuneration the remuneration of the CEO. It can't be determined inside the organization. The CEO can't determine the remuneration of the CEO. It's determined by the board.
I agree that that's probably how it's done at the moment. We seem to have a problem in South Africa, and some of the states are enterprises, and the remuneration which boards sometimes award to CEOs as well as bonuses. So this might be a way of just checking that an adequate remuneration or reasonable remuneration is in fact awarded, and having the minister being able to question that. I just think we need to look at best practice and also at worst practice, and how do we deal with the worst practice that we've seen in some of our state-owned enterprises. So I just think we need to flag this and come back to let's just research this a little bit more to see if we want that check and balance in there.
I agree with Honorable Khalil that maybe we should flag it. But I would also advise the drafters to go and check, King 3. King 3 is very clear, I can't download it here, that the remuneration, not the remuneration policy, is adopted by shareholders. So I think, look at it and let's unpack what does the remuneration policy mean, and where is the role of the shareholder. I think this is a one point, especially if you look at some of the questions, but also there needs to be a balance, because if you bring it to me, being a minister, earning 1.7 million, and then this guy is going to earn 5.6. I always from my other involvement somewhere. I always tell people, I say, you know what, don't think about your package. Think about the package and responsibility of the other person. Because it's human nature to say, I'm the minister here,
yeah,
and I'm earning 1.7 million, and this blog is going to earn 6 million rand or 5 million rand. Hang on, I'm taking financial responsibility, political responsibility for any fallout from this system. But I'm just saying, just be careful of that.
Yeah.
We're taking this one.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Let's proceed.
Chair, I was saying before go to 17. Can I take it to 30? Please, 30.
Okay.
My first comment on that one, it is on line 18, page 18. I'm just going to question there that the acting chief, whatever, who are giving him 6 months, which is good. In the unlikely event that after 6 months we have not sorted out things, what happened? Whatever it is, 6 months ends, and you don't have the real test.
Permanent appointment.
Yes.
In the event there is no permanent appointment after 6 months.
We can have a look at that. I think the discussions that we had is that if you make a provision for extension, you get into the forever extension. It then defeats the purpose that you put it for. Probably what you may want to do is that if the 6 months are finished, you might have to look at to get somebody else to do it, to act. But I think we would have to be advised. Either we put a provision that says the minister can then extend that, request. Okay, then it links back to the other point that we sort of discussed earlier on in terms of whether we want the minister to be involved in that particular appointment. And I think we said the minister is not going to be involved. Oh yeah,
yes.
For the CEO will be
6 months actually.
Yeah, to appoint her for the CEO. We can make a provision that allows for that to be extended.
Yes. Thank you, sir. Can I take it another one? Oh, that's clean. I'm not saying change. I'm saying if you're saying 6 months, are we going to change the act if 6 months ends and there's nobody? That's clean that, really. For that acting support.
What it means is that after the 6 months, you will not be the acting person. Because the act says you must be act only for a period of 6 months. So we need to find other mechanism of doing it that way. Either you get somebody else or you just may have to make sure that by 6 months time there's a person in there. Then what I'm proposing, and we're reaching myself, that we could allow the minister to extend that 6 months, maybe to whatever form, maybe in writing or something like that, in case the appointment is not done.
Do I take it to line 40? Same page. 40, line 40. It says the chief executive officer and the chief financial officer, as the case may be, are not divested. I'm not sure, I'm just checking at the language. If you say these two are not divested, do you have to say as the case may be? Or are you saying this one or that one? As the case may be. I'm checking that end. I'm not supposed to say that the chief executive officer or the chief financial officer, as the case may be. You have the same one or the other, as the case may be.
Yes, I will change it to all. That makes sense, because it's whichever is applicable at that point of time of the delegation.
Okay, fine. Anything else on page 13? We're flagging 23.1 and then correcting line 40.
Do I take you to page 15 before we go to 17? I know we're home to 17. Can I take you to page 15 before we go to 17?
Fine.
The line is 15. It is line. It is subsection 3 of 31. If the ISMA may not dispose of the majority of its assets or such part of its assets as have a significant impact on the ability to perform its function without the prior approval of the Minister of Finance. I'm happy with that, but I'm saying can we jump to finance without the Minister of Department being aware for the coming year? Is the Minister of Energy not supposed to be part of that?
The same with 31C.
Yes, sir.
Sir, I think Prof is right that we must avoid this in all other areas where it's affected. We're talking about ISMO in the Department of Energy. We cannot talk about other ministers in other areas. We're talking energy. So everything that must go to finance or must go to the president or must go to trade and industry or must go where, it will go through the Minister of Energy. So what we need to do is to say the buck stops with the Minister of Energy. And then between the Minister of Energy and the others, we don't talk about it in the end. That is a procedural matter that they know about. Now the issue here of mentioning the Minister of Finance create a picture of an ISMO that reports to the Minister of Finance directly without the Minister of Energy. And this happens a number of times now. I think wherever it appears in the act must be corrected. Because earlier on, Honorable Bullet was correcting it again when he was saying that clause 4 must be removed on the basis that it makes reference to the court, the Minister of Energy and the Minister of Finance. We cannot talk about the Minister of Finance. The Minister of Finance can be spoken to by the Minister of Energy. We can talk to the Minister of Energy. So our laws, we cannot make laws for the Department of Finance. We can only make laws for the Department of Energy.
Ma'am, actually.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, it also appears on 28.2. Subsection 2. Interest on such a loan at a rate determined by the minister acting with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. I think, yes, we are.
Can you make a distinction here? The focus on this at this stage in time is on
Minister of Finance
getting a formal response, endorsement or rejection from the Minister of Finance only without making mention or reference to Minister of Energy. I'm sure, Mama Tibela, in certain instances which link to finance, there probably is a need and a reason. In fact, it's safer where that the Minister of Energy concurs with the Minister of Finance, such that the Minister of Finance, I mean Energy, doesn't have to review a decision because the Minister of Finance is putting his or her foot down at a later stage. You know, that fancy footwork is there. Department on 31, I think that's where the debate is. 31.1C and 31.3. Direct reference is on the Minister of Finance without the usual practice of the Minister of Energy after consultation or after concurrence with the Minister of Finance. is there any motivation for you guys to say that? Because what I sense from the committee is they are not convinced in that approach. Madam Lord.
No, I'm just interested. I think if you look at section 31.3, it's exactly what's written in the section 54 of the PFNA. I think it's just a matter of repeating it here. Because if you look at what I've read there, in terms of PFMA, they cannot dispose assets without the approval of the National Treasury. So I think maybe that explains the reason why it's included here. Because in terms of section 54, the one I just read, they can of the PFMA, they cannot do that.
Okay.
So I think it's they are just repeating here for the purpose of yeah.
I suppose, okay.
Thanks, sir. I wanted to allude to that. That's why you will notice that this section is drafted differently from the 28th one. But I think it's a repetition. If there's a view that we don't want to refer to the Minister of Finance, we can take out that section because in any event, we'll deal with it in the PFMA.
Just as a matter of interest, you say in 31C the funds and assets of ISMO consist of shareholder contributions. Shareholder contributions.
I think this talks to a number of items. It could be a contribution by the shareholder of money, direct cash into the entity. It could talk to assets that might, for instance, let's say the shareholder decides that this asset moves from ESCOM into the entity. It comes as a shareholder contribution, but you still need to do something on the other side from where the asset came from. Because you wouldn't argue that it's contribution by ESCOM. It's a contribution by the shareholder to that new entity.
Shouldn't it then be more appropriate to say then approved by the Minister in concurrence with the Minister of Finance? If because these are assets and in view of what Honorable Mulata said with regard to 313, the relevance of and the legal relevance of the role of the Minister of Finance is crucial. Still, I feel that shareholder contributions should be initially considered by the Minister of Energy. Well, if the Minister of Finance has got to also have a say, that's fine.
Okay, I think it's more of a drafting issue. I would get my... I don't see to have a look and see whether how it's a drafting issue. We will see. I would ask how we could, because what you don't want it's something that sort of contravene what the PFMA says. I think that's what we are running away from.
My last one, Chair, before we go to 17, I'll pray for that. On page 15.
I thought we were going to end with page 15, but at least I hope the one we are reading now is not going to be that long.
No, the rest of mine now.
Okay.
It is page 16, page 5, subsection 3B. It says, in area where there is no electricity connection, apply like court for, I'm just changing the M to A court order, just as you did in line. That's the same technical one. So you are filming. I'll stop there for now, sir.
35.
That's changing N to A. A court order.
Okay, I was reading in the wrong area. Thanks very much for that. All the members, I think that's enough for today. It's already eating into lunch. Where are we meeting tomorrow? We're meeting in Compute Room 3, still in the same complex. Roma Tuna, any point? Seems you wanted to say something else. I thought we'd like to have take a break now to prepare for tomorrow.
No, thanks. I think the break would be helpful today.
Okay. Thank you very much. We can send agenda to tomorrow.
But, Chair, this is on a, sorry to come in. We just want to flag the point that we want to work on the document and we would sort of look at because we did it in a rush, so we might want to revise some of things, but whatever that we would have revised, we would flag it tomorrow from the infrastructure.
Actually, that's my question. Is it, do you want to revise the whole revised document tomorrow, or do you want to finish it off tomorrow and then we send you a clean copy?
No, the same one for that. But just that one of members, before it disappeared, there's just a challenge as well tomorrow. Quite a number of us apparently will be committed elsewhere. So one of the members is really going to be feasible that we meet tomorrow because we have been able to meet in Korea today. And I see Honorable Slau, Trade and Industry, Honorable Hadben Maya Kula, Higher Education and Training, Martino will still not be around. The Lotto will have another commitment. I suggest we skip tomorrow. This is a deal. I mean, every step of the way has got to have a quorum. And even on Friday, I would appeal members be very, very clear upfront that they will be attending. I think in this instance, my understanding is that priority given to legislation process, and if that's the case, it would be very helpful for members to indicate in time, because I'm sure from the department side they are throwing themselves. I mean, we've got a team of five here that has financial implications as well, but not only that, but in terms of time and in terms of planning when to finish the deal. Honourable Lord.
I support you fully, and I would even suggest that if possible, the whole drafting business of giving guidance to the department, members can come and finalize it, so that the department can use the weekend and Monday to clean up the things, so that by Tuesday, because I'm just worried that we might miss certain time frames. Parliament is about to go for constituency period. Possibly, I'm not sure whether it's next week or so, following week. Sorry?
The 26th.
Yeah, the 26th, the Parliament would be breaking. So you would want, if possible, that next week, Tuesday, we are going through this thing line by line, trying to clean it up wherever possible. Any possible finding another date, whether or the same Tuesday, adopting it, because I'm just worried about the things. I support the chairperson.
So, we will skip tomorrow, but skip to Friday. Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned.